You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi guys, I'm Prasad Banerjee and I write about tech at Mint.
And this is TechCetra, a podcast
where we tackle some hot topics in technology
and also
bust some myths. In this episode, we're still sticking with the Mint Digital Innovation Summit. But on this panel, we are talking to Jayant Kola, who's the founder of Convergence Catalyst, and Prateek Dixit, who's the CTO and co-founder of an audio series platform called Pocket FM. Here, we are talking about ChatGPT and generative AI and how it has impacted the world around us, how it will impact jobs, and how these product makers and thinkers are thinking of this technology in the future and how it will affect everything that they do and in return what we do.
We have had ChatGPT all day, right? I mean, we have had generative AI being talked about all day. But let me ask you one thing. Google invented Transformers back in 2017, right? Why the sudden proliferation in 2022? Why does it feel sudden? It was obviously not sudden.
Okay. I will give two personal examples to set that context and put things in perspective and answer your question as well. First is, just yesterday morning, my Facebook reminded me of a 3-year-old memory, which I put up as a story. And, I came across these four principles to lead a life, right? And very philosophical in nature. And it reminded me just yesterday. And the four principles are: learn from everyone, follow no one, look for patterns, and work like hell. 3 years back, during COVID days, I put it up as my Facebook story. And just this morning, I realized, oh my God, these are the principles and guardrails of an AI engine. Okay, AI engines learn from all the data that they have access to. Generative AI engines especially don't normally follow anything because of reinforcement learning. Okay, they look for patterns, they're great at looking for patterns, and they work 24/7. So my point is, AI engines are a little sliver offshoot of us humans, okay? In terms of capabilities and, potential, they're nowhere close to us. But in terms of flaws and deficiencies, I think they've inherited everything from humans. That is number one. Number two is, okay, coming to generative AI, and this is answering your question. Again, from my personal experience, right now, the generative AI, especially ChatGPT, with ChatGPT, we are having the iPhone movement of AI. Okay, what do I mean by that? I mean, I come from the mobile world. Back in the days, I launched Moto Razr. And then when, I was a product manager for Nokia, when Nokia was synonymous with mobile phones, had 85% market share in the country. But when Steve Jobs launched the iPhone, what he did was he brought the intuitiveness and the design thinking and this little tablet device closer to human interaction, right? And I think that's exactly what ChatGPT is doing with AI, right? I mean, it's bringing the entire, this awesome technology which has existed and which has been doing great things in the past, but it has brought to capture the imagination and very closer to the humans and how they interact with technology very intuitively. And that's why we see 100 million people using it in 2 months, 180 million right now. And that is exactly the difference, to answer your question. Although Transformers in 2017, Google had invented them, ChatGPT and OpenAI using languages at the very core, and like Jaspreet said in the morning, that language is the very fundamental way of how humans connect. ChatGPT and OpenAI has brought this technology very closer to the daily lives and the intuitive living way of living of how we humans do. And that, I think, has captured people's imagination at mass, at scale.
How do you look at it, Prateek?
I think I agree to what I think Jan said, right? So, if you look at the fundamental algorithm that was developed, it was developed in 2014 itself, right? So it's been almost eight to nine years, right? So it's not as if the fundamental algorithms are there from, let's say, 20 years, right? So one is that. The second is, obviously, you need large amount of data to train all of these things, right? And if you look at the data explosion that has happened in the last 5 or 6 years, right? I was just reading one of the articles yesterday. So internet is generating 320 million terabytes of data every year now, right? And look at OpenAI and ChatGPT. I mean, systems were there before. I mean, they're not trained enough to be so realistic, right? So second is data, obviously. I mean, you have insane amount of data to train so accurately, right? Third is obviously, I mean, if you look at NVIDIA, right? I mean, they have been extremely good with, I mean, the pace they have innovated in GPUs and training these systems fundamentally, right? So, I mean, overall computing power and GPU powers, I mean, have significantly exploded in last 4 or 5 years, right? So again, the computing power, data, and then obviously the fundamental algorithms were, I think, quite sort of like decently, that's...
But when I know you guys use a lot of this generative AI stuff within Pocket FM, right? Did it happen post ChatGPT, or were you working on it long time and
yeah,
it
so
happened?
We are a core content platform, frankly. I mean, so we are in 8 languages. I mean, all the native languages, India, I mean, Hindi, Tamil, Telugu, Kannada, English as well, right? So I think we were using, I think, kind of language translation from before, right? But there's something called localization as well. So let's say if you have a story in Hindi, right? Or maybe which was developed as part of North India, right? Which has the tuning set, everything set up as accordingly to North India, right? But now, and it has been written by a single writer, right? Now that writer has to launch that story in, let's say, Kannada or Telugu or Tamil, right? Now that story not just needs to be translated, but has to be localized to that specific setting as well. So I would say, I think we're using translation from before, but then post OpenAI, I mean, we have been using localized sort of like stories as well, building on top of what OpenAI has provided as fundamental models.
Got it. But today, when we look at all of this generative AI stuff, right? ChatGPT, Bard, both Google, OpenAI, they've very openly said that these are first generation products. They're, you said iPhone moment, right? If you pick up the first iPhone today, it's very hard to believe.
It didn't have Bluetooth, it didn't have 3G.
Exactly.
2007, yeah.
Exactly. So where is this then going? Does the industry today have an idea of where all of this is going, or is it like more, let's use it and see where it goes?
Okay. Again, two thought process, two insights. One is what Leslie called, AI 1.0 in the morning, or what a lot of AI industry observers or technology observers call conventional or traditional AI, or what Jaspreet said, that it was nothing but applied statistics, right? So the 1.0 AI, what is it good at, right? In my mind, it was great at pattern recognition, profiling, and basis the historical trends and extrapolation, a decent amount of prediction and forecasting and analysis, right? That was what 1.0 was good at, applied statistics, extremely good. Okay. What generative AI with language at its core, does is it's now good at content creation in the form of storytelling, narrative, thematic, overlay, okay, over the objective traditional AI. Now, when you combine both of these, right, 1 plus 1, the power can be 11, it's not 2, okay, it can be exponential. And the applications, there are many. In the near term, the way I look at it, a lot of assist, by combining these two, an AI engine can be a good, a secretary or a glorified secretary or an EA, or a digital assistant. And companies like Glean are already building those things. But having said that, I also believe that with AI in 2023, we are where we were with internet back in 1996. Okay, so crystal ball gazing or putting your bets on a player is extremely difficult. I mean, in 1996, if someone would have said that, a company which starts with delivering books to your homes and then by extending it to groceries and everything that you need will become the first $1 trillion company in the world, and the guy who invented, I mean, who founded that company will become the most richest guy in the world, no one would have bought them, right? I mean, but Amazon did that, right? And what did Jeff Bezos and Amazon do? They, internet did not create anything. They used internet, okay, as a distribution channel, okay, as a scaling, mechanism. All that they did was they hacked human laziness. People wanted to sit at home, okay, and wanted things to be delivered. Google again, 21st or 22nd search engine, you know, Yahoo search existed, AltaVista existed, but these guys come, you know, librarians existed before Google, books existed, encyclopedias existed, but these guys came and gave people, you know, knowledge at their fingertips. Again, you know, hacking human behavior. So I believe that even AI, people who can use the technology very innovatively and creatively, you know, there are many directions to go. Which one will win is very difficult to put your money on today.
But I mean, when you say that, you know, 1996 internet, we did not know and all of that, right? But from then to now, we've also learned the internet was supposed to be a tool for democracy and so on, right? And it didn't happen. Today, we have a splintered internet. We have the splinter net, so to speak, right? So shouldn't we be more careful this time with how we implement these things?
Definitely. And we need to learn from everything that we've invented, scaled, grown, and also got hurt. Okay. And that's why the guardrails are being put up. Okay. After almost 30 years, you know, we still don't have any solid regulation or policy to police internet. I mean, you know, some of the leading companies like Google has its security policy or data privacy, you know, secure internet policy and all of that. So some of the leading companies which will come will set these things in place. But definitely, you know, we obviously have to lead from, you know, learn from the debacles from the past. But before that, you know, the innovation, the potential for doing good, the potential for connecting disparate dots and deriving value is so huge. A lot of energy and resources will be spent there. But definitely, to your point, yes, guardrails and, you know, policies regulations need to be put in place.
How do you look at it, Pratik? When you deploy it within your company, can you discuss the guardrails that you are probably putting?
Look at from, I think, internet has always been like this. I mean, if you look at the evolution of internet, right, the kind of tools that we had, right? So I'll take a specific example, right? So you take Adobe Photoshop, right? I mean, we always used to thought that Adobe Photoshop will create a lot of these fake images of, I mean, consumers, right? And then obviously as a user, I think we developed that sort of like antibodies to understand which is a fake image and which is a real image, right? So it has always been like this. I mean, the trends of internet and the tools that we have created over the past 20 years, 25 years has always been like this. And it has challenged us in the same fashion. It's just that we need to have significant policies. And obviously we need to make sure that the kind of security piracy concerns, there are a lot of piracy concerns for us as well, in the sense that for that we need to create specific tools on top of what we have, right? So let's say for us as an example, right, we are, I think for us, I think writers are our, frankly, the core sort of like characters, right? So the writers, I think, right, frankly, we generate 5 petabytes of data every month, right? Now, how do you make sure that it's not being pirated, right? It's not being, let's say, used by these tools to generate, let's say, the similar kind of content in other, let's say, product, right? So I think we have, if you go to the pure technological way of doing it, we sort of like use a lot of these policies, a lot of watermarking within the content itself so that you know that it's being used somewhere else or it's being regenerated in different products and all. So I think policies needs to be there. And then obviously we need to build specific tools to achieve these, I think, concerns as well.
Got it. I'll come back to the dangers. Of course, we have to keep talking about the dangers. But let me quickly talk about the cost, Pratik, when you look at all of this, right? There's a lot of people have said it has to be the Microsofts and Googles of the world, right, which will lead all of this. There's huge costs involved to developing the LLMs and all of that. What is the role of startups today then? Yeah. Do you just have to keep piggybacking off them?
Right. So I'll probably take a different example, what Jen took. I mean, so remember when Android was launched, right? Back in 2006, right? So Android was pretty much vanilla itself, right? They just built the foundation itself, right? Now, when you look at now, there are millions of app developers creating apps which even Google cannot create. I mean, some of the top apps are being built by other developers itself, other companies, right? Which are not built by Google, Facebook, or Microsoft, right? So I feel that the foundational models would be, I think, very certainly difficult to train for a startup like us, where you need insane amount. I mean, OpenAI has $10 million funding, frankly, right? So not every startup can have that kind of funding, right? So foundational models would, frankly, be developed elsewhere, maybe by Big Org, Google, Microsoft, maybe Facebook as well. But the applications, the specifications that everyone needs, like for our case, let's say the AI localization, right? will be built by startup itself, right? And then startups will take it to next level itself. And I feel that even in case of generative AI as well, we'll see that inflection point which is not being built by these big org.
I'd like to quickly add a minute on that. I believe that thanks to what happened on Feb 24th and a couple of weeks later, the democratization of LLMs and the big data models of generative AI, Llama being open source by Facebook, and now, you know, people are able to...
But, you know, like as journalists, we often hear a lot of these companies come and say that, you know, we are taking all of this forward. Like, we are taking a pinch of salt.
I think, yeah, so for sure, I think even if you take our example as well, I mean, the models that we are building on top of generative AI or the fundamental OpenAI models, these are far, far superior in terms of doing specific things that we want. We talk about AI localization, translating and localizing a content from, let's say, Tamil to Telugu to Hindi to English, right? A lot of these models are far sort of like specific and then superior in nature of what we have as foundational models. So for sure, I completely agree with that.
Got it. Yeah. And I'll end this panel with a word on jobs, right? We have, again, throughout the day, we have talked about this. What happens to jobs? Do they take jobs? Do new jobs get created? How do you see it happening?
I think, again, with every technological innovation, I think we have seen skill sort of like getting higher. I mean, a skill gap getting decreased as well. With this as well, we feel that, I think, because the knowledge is so available, right, frankly, to anyone, right? The skill gap would reduce a bit. The mundane jobs could frankly disappear a bit, but then there'll obviously be better jobs to be created with OpenAI. I mean, frankly, employees with AI would do far better than employees not with AI. And then obviously, I think the better jobs would be created for sure. Right?
I can go very deep on this question, but I'll end it in two lines. I believe, you know, net-net, every technology has only created jobs. Okay. But with AI and with generative AI, I think we are, I personally believe we are seeing the onset of era of polymaths. Okay? If you're a polymath, you're going to be a winner in the next era. And I can explain this at length offline for anyone who's interested.
Thanks a lot, guys, for joining us. And that's it for this week's episode. Please do let me know what you thought of it and what else you would want me to cover. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Undertecker. Yes, you heard that right. That's UNDERTECHER. You can also give us feedback at HT Smartcast. We're present on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And please do log on to htsmartcast.com and listen to all of our productions.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HT Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.htsmartcast.com.